Midrash mean to say here? I mean, what does it mean that each one said Eicho, and it's like the Matruno, that each one saw in a different state? So the Mefarshim here learn on the spot that what the Midrash means to say that one thing led to the other. The first Eicho of Moshe Rabbeinu leads to the second Eicho of Yishayahu HaNovi, and the second Eicho of Yishayahu HaNovi leads to the third Eicho of Yirmiyahu. Now, what is this Eicho that Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, which is a criticism to Klal Yisrael? What is the nature of the criticism of Klal Yisrael when he says, how can I carry myself the burden? Now, there is a big problem concerning this piece of Torah. This piece in the Torah is extremely difficult. Moshe Rabbeinu is recalling something that in the Torah itself he doesn't say. Listen to the description of this story. Moshe Rabbeinu says that he told the Jewish people, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Hovu lochem anoshim chachomim unevoinim vidrim shitefet. Get people who are capable people, chachomim, nevoinim, yeduim l'shifteichem, v'asimim b'roshaychem, and I will assign them on top of you. In other words, I'll create a body which will be instead of me, because I can't carry the load. So I'll assign a body who will be able to carry the load. Okay? And in Pasuk 14, v'ta'anu osi. Now, the word v'ta'anu osi is a double meaning. La anos in Hebrew means what? To answer. But there is a second meaning in the word inui, which is also spelled the same way. La anos also means what? Affliction, to afflict. Right? Here, the word is used with a double meaning. La anos, you answered me in order to afflict me, says Rashi. Vatanuosi, says Rashi, really? I expected you to say something else, says Rashi. What should have been the answer of the Jews when he said, I'll create a body to do my job? You should have said what, says Rashi? Rabbeinu Moshe, memino elilmoit, mimcho mitalmitcho. The Jews should have said, no, we would rather learn from you than from your disciples. But I know what you were thinking, because you are going to say now, we'll bring them presents. Right. As long as Moshe Rabbeinu is on top, he's incorruptible. But as soon as Moshe will establish a whole body, then it will be easy to corrupt them. Mevim loydoroi will bring him presents. Vehu notelon uponim. So he will decide on our behalf. So therefore, the Jews rejected Moshe Rabbeinu because they felt that it would be easier to live with that body that will substitute for Moshe Rabbeinu. And then Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, you want it this way? Here it is. So what do you set up? You should set up the system of the pyramid of power. Sorei Alofim, every 1,000 people should have one leader, but he is under him 10 leaders of 100 people, who each one has under him one leader of every 10 people, the whole pyramid of power. What is Moshe Rabbeinu recalling here?
Yisroel.
Yisroel. What's the proof that this is Yisroel?
This
system is what he suggested. We don't find any other time when this system was suggested. But if this is so, then the story is not what Moshe Rabbeinu says over it is. How does the story appear in Yisroel? Simply this. Yisroel comes. He sees how burdened Moshe Rabbeinu is, and he says, you won't be able to take it. Yitzhak said it. Right? And Moshe Rabbeinu says, good idea, and he sets up the system. True? That's the way the story appears in Yitzhak. How does the story appear over here? That the suggestion came from Moshe Rabbeinu. And the answer came from the Jews, great idea. And now Moshe Rabbeinu criticizes them, you should have said, no, we want you. Yisro is out of the picture completely. The main actor is out of the picture. That doesn't make any sense. Right? So, the real pshat is, we mentioned it in Pasha Sisro, the real pshat. Really, of course, in Pasha Sisro it has to be understood. It just doesn't make any sense that here comes the Gentile priest, right? And he gives us advice how to run our people, right? That the Moshe Rabbeinu shouldn't be... So the question was, if it's a good idea, why couldn't we think of that? Why didn't Hashem tell it to us? Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu think of that? If it's a bad idea, how come it was accepted? That was the question we discussed in Pashas Yisro, right? Doesn't make sense. Yisro comes, gives us an idea, and then we accept it. It doesn't make any sense. So we said that really the system of Yisro is terrible. Terrible. Because we are giving up on the centrality of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, who could be the teacher of each one of us, I'm talking about the generation of the Midbar, each one would have been a Talmid of Moshe Rabbeinu. Gave it up because they felt, well, if my Rebbe is too strict, if he's too good, it obligates too much. Right? If we create that gap, filled by the whole pyramid of leadership, right? It won't obligate us so much. Because after all, so we are not Talmidim of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay? But what's the ideal system? The ideal system is that each one of the Jews in the Midbar should be a direct Talmid of Moshe Rabbeinu. Not that Moshe Rabbeinu should have substitutes. Right? Yisro comes and he says, no, it's too burdensome. Gladly, Moshe Rabbeinu says, I love this burden. This burden, right? As long as what? As it's practical, as long as it works. But Yisro's coming, right, only brought up something that was already brewing in the minds of all the Jews. That's the problem, right? So when Yisro came in and said it, right, he was just saying what was on their minds anyway. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, is that what you want? That was the opportunity for doing tshuva. For their saying, no, really we would rather have you as the whole teacher, no matter how difficult it is. We don't want substitutes from Moshe Rabbeinu. We want the real thing. You didn't say that. Since you didn't say that, so that's it. So we are creating the system of leadership. Okay? But any system of leadership, any judicial system, any legislative system is bad for Klal Yisrael. It's not ideal for Klal Yisrael. The system for Klal Yisrael should be a system of rabbeinus. That's all. Teachers. You want to know what to do? You want to know what's right and wrong? You want to know, do you owe somebody money? You don't owe somebody money? Don't go to the judicial system. Go to the a judicial system is because there is a flaw in the educational system. If the educational system would be perfect, if Moshe Rabbeinu would be the perfect Rabbeinu and we would be the perfect disciples, who needs a judicial system? Who needs a legislative system? We need Moshe Rabbeinu, that's all. That is the ideal system of Klal Yisrael, this pre-Yisro system.
Why do we name the Sidra of Yisro after
Yisro? That's such a great question. Why do we name Korach's Sidra after Korach and Bilam?
I've heard the interpretation that he suggested this.
That doesn't mean that it's good. I'm saying you're right. We do give him credit, but the fact that we named the parsha after him is no proof. We have some people who are not so nice, and we still name the parsha after them.
Rashi said that one of
Yitro's name
was Yetzer,
but
he added a piece of the Torah.
Fine. So did Korach. There is in the Hasidic literature, they say even Bolok hit a certain chus, a certain merit, because at least he was better than Bilam, because Bilam was a covered up. That's why we give him credit too, right? Or Korach, right? That he meant the Shem, whatever it is. In the Hasidic literature, we do find that, but the point is like this. The Torah does give Yisro credit. The Torah does give Yisro credit, because in reality, he meant well. You know, he was bringing in the Gentile values into Judaism. He meant well, meaning he couldn't understand, he couldn't comprehend the system of Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? He expressed his idea, coming from the outside, coming into Judaism, it's an impossible system. What do you mean that you have a system based on a Rabbeinu? Right? There has to be a judicial system. What do you mean that you have a Rabbeinu system, an educational system that takes care of all the judicial problems? It's an impossible system to anyone who doesn't have an insight into the essence of Torah. The problem is that when Yisro brought it into Klal Yisrael, right, that in itself became the accepted point of view. He started the idea, he started the weakness, the flaw of the Jewish people of accepting values from the outside. Right? And that's already the good Gentile. Remember, Yisro is considered the best Gentile. As a Gentile, he's the best. But he comes in and he gives us advice, and we have to accept it. We have to integrate it within Torah. And we did. We take Gentile advice and we integrate it into Torah because we can't keep up with the ideal Torah. So we have to find second best. We have to find a substitute for Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay? So the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu ignores the Torah of the whole story, Yisro, is because he's telling you what really is going on. Remember, he's giving Musar. He's giving rebuke. He's telling them, he's criticizing them. He's bringing out the real points, what are behind it, what's behind the scenes, behind the story. The surface of the story was Yisro came, he gave us advice, and we accepted. He wanted to show, yes, but I know why it was accepted. It was accepted because it was in your minds all along. You don't want me. You want the gap. You want the substitutes because it's too much. It's too intense. My teaching is too intense. You want an easier life. That's what's expressed by Rashi when he says, we can give presents and get out of it. Which means, we can have an easier life with substitutes for Moshe Rabbeinu. It's too intense in the Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, so this is then the story that he's recalling. He's recalling what goes on behind the scenes in Parshat Yisro. Now, if so, we understand now what the nature of the Eicho is. What is the lamentation of Moshe Rabbeinu? He's lamenting the fact that you didn't say, but we want that bird. Right? This Eicho leads to the second Eicho. When you want an easier life, when you don't want the real thing, that Eicho will lead to the second Eicho of Eicho Yisol Lezoino. What was Eicho Yisol Lezoino? When spiritual life becomes too burdensome to you, the next step will be that you will become completely involved in material life. That will make you into a prostitute. That will make you into a zoino. That is Yishayahu. So the first Eicho led to the second Eicho. And what will that lead to? The running after materialism leads to what? To Eicho Yoshva Vodo, to the destruction of the temple eventually. Okay? So that's what it's the Medrash means. One Eicho leads to the second Eicho, which leads to the third Eicho. And the nature of the first Eicho was, we don't want Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is too much for us. That is the source of all the problems. So I once saw that really there is another source that precedes the three Eichos. After the Chet Odom Orishon, what is the first word that Hashem tells Odom Orishon? What's the word? Ayeko. How do you spell Ayeko? Eicho. Aleph Yud Chof Ei. The nature of Eicho is Ayeko. Ayeko. Now, what does it mean? What does the question mean, Ayeko? What does the question mean, Ayeko? Does it mean, tell me where you are, I don't know where you are? Ayeko means, do you know where you are? Right? That was when Hashem says to Odom Orishon, Ayeko. It doesn't mean to say, I don't know where you are. It means, Ayeko, do you know where you are? Which means that the source of all sins is not knowing what the consequences are. Now, it's where you are exactly. To recognize your real level, right? That's where the source of all sins come from. From that Ayeko comes the Eicho Eichoy Solevadi, which leads to the Eichoy Solezoino, which leads to the Eichoy Yoshuvotot. Everything is set, is centered in the Ayeko, when Hashem tells Odom Orishon Ayeko, you committed a sin because you don't know where you are. You justify yourself, and you think if you are in one level and really you are in a completely different level, then ignoring your real level, ignoring where you are, ignoring the consequence of your actions, that is the source of all sin. Now, in Pasuk Gimel, we find the requisites for the position of being a substitute for Moshe Rabbeinu. What are they? Hovu lochem anashim chachomim unevoyim bidduim v'shiptechem. Characteristic of da'at. So they need chochmo, they need bino, and they need da'at. And if you take a look in Pasuk 15, vo'ekah, and I chose, anoshim chachomim viduim. People with chokhma and das. What's missing? Bino. Says Rashi. Where did the bino go? Says Rashi. Says Rashi viduim. Avol nevoinim loy motzosi. Rashi quotes from the Sifrei that he could not find nevoinim in the whole Klal Yisrael. He didn't find nevoinim. It means he didn't find Nevoinim at that level where he could choose them as leaders. There was a lack of Bino. And that requires an explanation. Why was there a lack of Bino? Why was there a lack of Bino in Klal Yisrael at the time? So, if you remember, we spoke about the nature of Torah in the Midbar. The nature of Torah in the Midbar. But I want to clarify first, what is Chochmo, Bino, and Das? What is Chochmo? Rashi says here on the spot, Chochmo is the acquisition of knowledge. That is Chochmo. Right? When you tell a child, this is an Aleph, and this is a Bet, right? And together it reads Av, that is Chochmo. The child is acquiring wisdom. What about when the child is able to put together the information and then you put together for him the Aleph and the Mem and you ask him, what do you read it? How do you read it? And he says, aim! Oh, then he put him, he's using his creative capacity, right? And he was able, lehavin, to understand one thing from another, to derive one piece of knowledge from another piece of knowledge. That's called Bino. Dobor mitoy dobor. That's the capacity of Bino. Something that you have to be creative in. In order to have Bino, you have to have an insight into the Chochmah. Chochmah is not sufficient. Chochmah is just the acquisition of the information. Without Bino, you don't really have an insight into it. And then there is a third category, which is even after you have all the insights and all the understandings, you have to give it a certain value in order to be able to weigh one piece of information against another piece of information. A doctor may have all the knowledge and all the Bino in the world, but after all is said and done, he'll have to make a decision. Should I operate or shouldn't I operate? And all the information won't be able to make the decision for him. The decision will have to be made by him by weighing all the information he has. That capacity to weigh, that's called judgment, that's called da'as. When that capacity of da'as is rooted in a special relationship with Hashem, that's called Ruach HaKodesh. If you take a look by Bezalel, the architect of the base of the Mishkan, it says he had Chochma Bino V'Das, says Rashi, Da'as Ruach HaKodesh. Why? Because that capacity of judgment, when it's rooted in a very intense relationship with God, is Ruach HaKodesh. So that's Da'as.
How would you translate it? Da'as is judgment?
The best translation is judgment. Bino is... it's like deductive reasoning, let's call it. I mean, but you understand what it means. I mean, translation will never do justice to the word in itself. You see, Havono also means the deeper insight into things in order to see differences. Because Chochmo just tells you information. One thing looks like the other. So the capacity... Right, acquiring knowledge. The capacity to discern is Avono. That's why the word Avono has in it the word, the letters Beit Nun. Beit Yud Nun, which means what? Beit. Now, the differentiation between things. That's Avono. Okay? Now, why? Because Kodesh and Choyl, I can teach you. This is Kodesh and this is Choyl. This is white and this is black. What about when you get to a gray area and you have to make decisions that are not so clear cut, right? Then you need Havono. You have to differentiate exactly. This is this side of the line and this is this side of the line. That you need Havono. Chochmah won't help you. Chochmah will help you to know white and black. In the gray areas, Chochmah won't help you. You need Bein. You need Havono. Bein. So, these are the three characteristics. Now, remember, the whole nature of Torah in the Midbar, we find the following characteristics that were used. Chochmah, right? Moshe Rabbeinu teaching the Jews Torah is Chochmah. Right? And we find Das, right? Das. Das, in other words, you have the information, I have to decide. With all the information I have, should we do this or should we do that? So there's Das. But what about creating a new halacha by deriving one halacha from the next? For instance, there is a halacha that a son inherits, a daughter doesn't inherit. True? What about if it's a daughter that has no brothers? That's a new case. Chochmah won't tell you anything. Right? Das, you don't have enough information to make the judgment. You need Bino. Will you use the Bino? You'll never use the Bino. Why? Because if you can use Chochmah, you have no right to use Bino. Why? Because you can go to the source and ask what the halacha is. Why should you derive it yourself? Okay? So the essence of Torah is go to the source. Ask Hashem. So Bino was discouraged in the Midbar. The whole essence of Torah was through Chochmah and Das. It's interesting. Do you know that one of the explanations why Yehoshua is called Yehoshua Bin Nun instead of Yehoshua Ben Nun, besides that there is an interpretation based on some unknown principle of Dikduk that since the next letter Bin Nun, that's why it has to be an E. It doesn't matter, but after all, it does say Bin, says the Gemara, says the Medrash, Bin Loshen Bino. Yehoshua developed Bino. Now, so in the Mefoshim it says like this. Why do we stress that Yehoshua developed Bino? Because the Gemara says like this. The Gemara makes an analogy between Moshe and Yehoshua with the sun and the moon. Pnei Moshe ki pnei chamo, pnei Yehoshua ki pnei levon. What does it mean? The nature of the sun, right, is that it gives out everything. The nature of the levone is that it doesn't give out anything of its own. The light that it gives out, it's only what it receives, right? So that's what it gives out. It first has to receive. The nature of the levone is analogous to Pino, not to Chochmah. Right now, it's he receives and then he can give it out. He can only give out what he receives. Okay? But the very nature of the moon is that as long as the sun is shining, you ignore it completely. Now, the moon, when the sun is around, is absolutely nothing. The sun is so overwhelming that it gives no room for the moon to develop itself. Which means Yehoshua bin Nun, right, became Yehoshua bin Nun after Moshe Rabbeinu's death. The same way that it's only after the sun sets that the moon becomes something important. That was the nature of Yehoshua, which means like this. As long as the sun is around, all the moons have nothing to say. So in a way, the moon-like quality of Bino, you understand the analogy, that Bino is like a moon-like quality. After you receive information, then you can create your own light. But first you have to receive, otherwise you can't reflect. That's possess the nature of Yoshua bin Nun, which is after Moshe Rabbeinu. As long as Moshe Rabbeinu is around, he's not Yoshua bin Nun, which means that nature of bin Nun is hidden until Moshe Rabbeinu passes away, that Bino. Therefore, since the Bino quality was hidden, it wasn't developed, they never developed it to the level that they could use it. Therefore, the leaders of Klal Yisrael developed Chochmok, developed Das, but not Bino.
Was he called Bin Nun before Moshe?
Yes, of course, it doesn't matter, but the thing is, the fact that he has that name, it means that he has that capacity, the moon-like quality.
Did he not develop that in the case of the miraculous, which shows that he had a Bino?
Okay, but even that, it says that that capacity of Yeshua bin Nun wasn't used until Moshe Rabbeinu died. It says this is why Moshe Rabbeinu prays for him, because the natural tendency of Yeshua bin Nun was also to accept. In other words, if had he not prayed for Yeshua, his natural tendency would be, oh, if they say so, I'll listen to them. He was by nature a listener. It's God who adds to him, who gives him the broche chazak ve'ematz, which means you should have omets, which means you should rely on yourself, don't rely on others, which means that Yoshua's natural tendency were not to be on his own, right? You know, that was a hidden power in Yoshua, that once he came up, he developed that capacity. But Moshe was afraid that Yoshua didn't have it. Okay, now in Pasuk Tezayin, Vo atzave shifteichem eshofteichem bo esai lemor, and I commanded those people who will create this new body. Now, this new body, you have to understand, is neither a judicial system nor a legislative system. It's a leadership system. It's an educational system, right? But an educational system with substitutes for Moshe Rabbeinu. The part of it which is judicial is also part of the educational system, which means if you are the head of 10 people and they have a problem, they'll come to you to decide on the problem, but not as a judge, as a teacher, right? So it's not really the judicial system. The judicial system is set up when? Long after this. In Parshas Be'alo Yisro, right? This is Parshas Yisro. In Parshas Be'alo Yisro, after the Jews reject the man, that's when what? The 70 are chosen. Remember, these are not the 70. This system is the educational system of Klal Yisro, the leadership system of Klal Yisro, not the judicial and the legislative system, which is set up much, much later, right? That was a deeper flaw of Klal Yisro, that they rejected Moshe Rabbeinu even as a judge, even as a legislator, and they had to set up a whole body of a legislature. That's in Parshas Be'alo Yisro. You realize that we are talking about two different things here. So he's giving them a command. Shomoya bein achechem, listen bein achechem, between your brothers. What does the statement mean? Shemoya ben achechem, and then it goes on. Ushvatetem tzedek ben ishu veinochiv uvein geiroi. We'll see later on what that means. But what does the statement mean? Listen, shemoya ben achechem, in pasuk tezayim. So simple pshat is listen to the cases that come up among your brothers. Says the Amik Dovor. There is in the Gemara something that's called din merume. Din merume. The word ramai means it's a dishonest case. What is it called, a dishonest case? A dishonest case is the following, says the Gemara. What about if a person comes in front of the judge and he brings proof to his point of view, and he brings documents, and everything he brings is checked out, and it's 100% okay? But the judge, after all evidence is brought to him, remains with a sense that there is something wrong with the case. But there is nothing that he can put his finger on, because everything looks so perfect. What should he do? Should he follow the law and say, yes, he's right? Or should he decide according to the halacha of Din Merumen? Says the Gemara, been merume, if you sense that everything is a setup, you have a right to go against the halacha, against the evidence in the case, and pasken to the way you think is right. That's called din merume. He says the Amek Dover, where is it hinted in the Torah? It's hinted in the Torah is Shomoya Bein Acheichem. What does it mean, Shomoya Bein Acheichem? Between your brothers, which means like this, two people are talking. It's what one says and what the other one says is one thing. But sometimes you can hear from in between something else what neither one says. So listen from in between means listen to things that neither one says. That the judge has the obligation to listen to things that the people don't say. That is din merumen, the right of the judge to listen to things that no one says. That's bein acheichem. The next problem with this pasuk is ushfatetem tzedek, you shall judge correctly bein ish uvein ochiv uvein geiroi. Now, I don't know how they translate by you geiroi. Which way do they take the geiroi? The translation word geiroi in the Chinese translation.
How do they translate
stranger.
It?
What?
Stranger.
Stranger? I'm surprised it translates stranger. Because Rashi doesn't even bring that possibility. The simple pshat is geiroi, your stranger. Right? Rashi ignores that possibility completely. How does Rashi learn geiroi? In Posuk Tezayin, Uvein geiroi, says Rashi, Tupshotin. Ze bal dinoi she oiger. Lagor means it gathers or piles up, piles on words, or the same pshat. Uvein geiroi, geiroi loshen dwelling. Lagur. Af aliske diro. For instance, Chalukas Achim. Two brothers, each one says the house belongs to me, and the other one says no, the house belongs to me. That's Geiroi, where they should live. You hear? Or Tanur Lekirayim, for instance, one says the Tanur, this kind of the oven belongs to me, the other one says no, the other type of the oven belongs to me. And the Meforshim say, that's what the Torah is saying, according to Rashi's interpretation, but that's from the Gemara, is that even the most minute thing, right, there is no difference in the value of one house and the other. The judge has no right to say, listen, that's not a relevant case. Because what difference does it make whether you take this house or the other one takes this house, he takes this house and the other one takes this house? No, it's no difference. The judge has no right to say that. The judge has to judge even in such a case. However, the Gemara in Yevamos does say that Ben Geiroi means the stranger. Not like Rashi, not the way Rashi brings down from Chazal. There is one Chazal says, Omar Rabbi Yehuda, how do you know that in order for someone to convert, you need three people? Because it says, Uvein Geiroi, and it's called a Mishpot, and in order for a Mishpot to be legal, how many judges do you need? Three. So from that you know that in order to convert you need three people. Do you hear what the Gemara learns it out? How do we know that in order to convert you need three people? Why isn't it enough if you go in yourself and you convert and nobody sees you? After all, it's something between yourself and God. Why isn't it enough for you to go into the mikveh and become a Jew? Because it says in the Torah Ben Geiroi that there are matters concern your stranger, and that what the Torah calls it Mishpot. Right? Mishpot Ushvatetem, you see in Posuk Tezayin, Ushvatetem Mishpot, and Mishpot is always three judges, so you see that Gerin requires three judges. This is how the Gemara learns it out. So the question is, why doesn't Rashi learn the simple pshat? Geiroi, I mean everybody can. Your first reaction is Geiroi means you're a stranger. In the Torah, if you take it to mean your stranger, is impossible. Try to fit it in. You shall judge tzedek, right? correctly. Bein ishu bein ochi, if there is an argument between people, uvein geir, between a Jew and a stranger. What do you mean? I mean, what does that have to do with that geir? You mean? And saying what that conversion needs three people is an argument? Is there an argument? Whether is there a judgment? What are we arguing? What kind of a decision? You hear? I mean, somehow the Torah seems to be implying that there is some kind of a mission, right? There is a judgment that he has to weigh, the judge has to weigh. What should I decide in a case of a stranger? What do you have to decide? You have to be there, he goes into the mikveh, and that's all. What else do you have to do?
The reasons for going into it. I mean, it's not so questioned, yeah.
You are saying that this is a hint to the process of Gerus. The process of Gerus is that you have to decide whether it's a Ger Tzedek or not. That decision requires judgment. But really it's not true. Really it's not true. Because the halacha is that b'dieved. Now it's lechatchile, the judges have to make sure that the conversion is but what about if judge agir, right? And if they didn't go through the whole process before, is it a kosher gerus or not? So says the Rambam on this, yes, it's a kosher gerus. It's a thoroughly kosher Rambam. I mentioned that in the past. Many people find it extremely difficult. Says the Rambam, and we wait and see what comes out of it. Says the Rambam. This is what the Rambam says. And we wait and see after the conversion. We wait and see what comes out of it.
They have the initial cue to at least come to a decision that his machshavas is right.
You're right, lechatchile. But you see that the halacha is b'dieved. They never saw him before in their lives. He says, "I'm a Gentile. I'm going to convert." He jumps into the water in front of them. He's kosher Jew. But says the Rambam, we have to see what comes out of it. If he comes out of the water and then he goes and worships idols, then his conversion is retroactively not possible, which means like this, that there is a point where the judges have to decide, is that considered an annulment of the conversion or not? So since that case is included in Mishpat, right, the Torah establishes in the whole process of Gerus, the idea of Mishpat, but the simple interpretation of the pasuk of the Ger would be a case where they have to make a decision, was it a good Gerus or not, according to the Rambam. It's an incredible opinion of the Rambam. We don't, in most other Meforshim, it's not brought down lehalacha, but the Rambam paskens that a convert theoretically can eventually do something that will make him a non-Jew retroactively.
Is there any of that we hold today by halacha in conversion of Ger
Tzedek? No. Nowadays, what we paskens is if at the time he was a good convert. And a week later, he changes his mind completely and he becomes a goy gomor. Halachically still a Jew. Right? That's the halacha. But the Rambam doesn't say that. The Rambam seems to imply that if he does certain things, that shows that his conversion wasn't good. So there are things that the judge has to decide upon. Okay.